Think on your feet for our Fast and Curious 5K, a one-of-a-kind race hosted by WBEZ and the Chicago Sun-Times on Saturday, July 27th at Humboldt Park. More info and early bird registration at wbez.org/events.
This WBEZ podcast is supported by the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. Suicide is a topic that hides in the shadows. It's time we talk away the dark, learn how to spot the warning signs for suicide, and how you can have an open, caring, real conversation to help save lives. Visit the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention to watch the new short film and learn more at afsp.org/talkawaythedark.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. How do we create a space of spiritual healing for survivors of sexual violence? That's a question an arts group led by Black survivors is working to answer. The group Surviving the Mic is rethinking what a church space can look like. They're blending poetry writing workshops, resource sharing, and meditation in an upcoming event series called The Survivors Revival. We spoke with the point people of this project to learn more. Nikki Patan is the founder and executive producer of Surviving the Mic. Mojdeh Stokely is the research and innovation officer, and Sante Harden Tate is the advocacy and accountability officer. All three also share the title of executive director. Nikki, I'll start with you. Why did you start Surviving the Mic?
Wow, it's we're almost 10 years old.
So wow.
We'll be 10 years old next January. I had been working in advocacy for survivors of sexual violence for a really long time, and also had been working as a poet, and sort of noticed that there wasn't really a space for the two of those things to exist simultaneously. So mm-hmm. I said, you know, we kind of started with like one idea, which was a 10-week writing and performance workshop for folks who identified as Black, femme, spoken word artists, and survivors of sexual violence. 10 weeks long, I had 5 guest teachers, including Sonia Renee Taylor from The Body Is Not an Apology, mm-hmm. Dr. Tara Betts, Cece Carter, Enina Jay, and Kokuma Kinetic. And at the end of that 10 weeks, folks looked at me and said, hey, can we do an open mic? And at the time, I had a newborn, and I had just started an MFA program, and I was like,
ooh.
And lived 60 miles outside of the city.
Okay, that's a lot.
But I was like, okay, let's do it. And 10 years later, we're still doing that. So we, you know, have held space in person and virtually monthly and sometimes, you know, twice monthly now for 10 years and mm-hmm. mostly volunteer run.
Well, you mentioned the target group there. I want you to dig deeper and just describe that
sure.
need for this kind of work, particularly when it comes to Black women and girls.
Absolutely. So Black women and girls are one of the groups that is most impacted by sexual violence in this country. With the exception of Indigenous women, we have the lowest rates of incarceration, but experience one of the highest impacts of sexual violence at a rate of over 60% before the age of 18.
Mm.
And so that's 60. As we all came out of a pandemic, we know that that's 3% of the population. So they don't really have a word for 60. So it particularly affects us, but we also don't get traction in the criminal legal system. And we don't really get a whole lot of space culturally to speak about this from our perspective through our voices.
How did you get involved in this work, Mojdeh?
I was actually a part of the first 10-week cohort, and at that time, I guess we'll talk about this a little bit later, but I couldn't utter the word survivor. I could talk about other survivors. I could celebrate other survivors in their growth and development, but I couldn't identify with that language.
Do you know why?
A lot of it has to do with family, faith, and heritage. I'm Afro-Persian, so what does that mean in terms of half of my identity and the other half of my identity as well? But we went to Minnesota to do this culminating performance, and on the drive home, first of all, everyone assumes survivors are crying in the corner. That drive was all turn up. We were laughter the whole time there and the whole time back. It was delightful. So on the way back,
we
were like, Nikki, what do you want to do with this? She's like, start an organization. So we were like, cool. Do you need our resumes? You got a board.
Hmm. What is unique about Surviving the Mic, Sante?
That's so much that is unique, honestly. I think that it is a brave space. I know a lot of times when we talk about setting a space for survivors, we're saying a safe space. There's really no way to provide or to promise a safe space. But what we do at Surviving the Mic is provide that brave space. It gives you a space to speak out. It gives you a space to be elevated, for people to hear your voice. It gives you a space for you to live your truth, which is something that survivors don't get to do very often. And so I think that if we talk about what makes us unique, I would have to say that's one of the biggest things about us, is that I haven't seen that duplicated in any other environment. Mm-hmm. And it's what draws people into us.
Yeah, I'm glad you made that distinction between brave space and safe space, because we do. You're right. We do hear that a lot. Right. I want to turn back to you, Nikki. You started this organization. You recently became a 501c3.
Yes.
Remind us what that is and what it means for you specifically in this team.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, 501c3 is your legal designation as a nonprofit. It means that you're, you know, you can open a bank account, you can collect donations. In some cases, you can get tax exempt status. And so for us, running Surviving the Mic for so long without that meant that we ran it without donations, without any sort of like funding or support whatsoever. I mean, it was really, truly a labor of love. Like when you say blood, sweat and tears, you know, my son will be 10 this summer. But when we first started, he was a toddler. And mm-hmm. one time we were literally running Surviving the Mic out of a cafe. And after the open mic was over, we looked up and he was like in the dessert case, like just hanging out because we're like breaking down chairs and the whole thing. So
you'll always remember that. Though,
oh,
right?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's one of our best memories, but it's also a reminder of just how much love people have sown into this. So now that we're a 501c3, we just won our first grant from the network,
nice.
Which was really exciting. And it just allows us to do this work on a whole different level.
You filed as a religious organization, though.
We did.
Why?
We did. Well, we looked at the designation. We looked at the definition of that. And it said, you know, like-minded people who gather together on a consistent basis. That would be us. And healing for all of us, and all of us have very different, you know, religious experiences and perspectives. I've for a very long time self-identified as a heathen. So this was really interesting that we filed in this way. I mean, I've been in like 10 bands. I've toured all over the world. You know, like that's, you know,
right.
No shame in my game. But what we recognize, though, is that healing is a spiritual journey. Mm. No matter what your religious affiliation, belief system, it is a spiritual journey to choose to say, I want to move forward. I want to evolve. I want to heal the pain. I want to acknowledge that I have this pain, and I want to make sure that this pain doesn't carry over, especially if you're a parent, onto like my children or
yeah.
my friends or my family.
Yeah.
You know? So,
and Mojde, I'm stuck by your description of that car ride, right? The experience. Mm-hmm. We're talking about art here, essentially, right? And we know art can take you to a place. It can be transcendent. So I want you to talk to us about how experiencing performance, how that can feel like a church service. For instance.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is something people tell us at the end of each event almost consistently, that it feels like church. I think that there's something to the reality, like Nikki and I specifically come out of the slam poetry movement, though we were both writing before we entered it. And so in that form, you cannot as a person be detached from your art. Right. Because you have to write your own work in order for it to be OK for the competition or within rules. Mm. And so there is something to be said about writing your truth and then uttering that truth. And there's plenty of science to back this. Feel free to email me if you want links to studies. But the act of writing, you actually are internally verbalizing when you look at your own words, right? So there's a neuroscience part of this.
Right, and that's true. Yeah.
Yeah, and then when you share it, it has like a release capacity as well. And so that can be a lot like prayer. That can be a lot like testimony. And I think that's what it is. I think ultimately what we do specifically with Surviving the Mic, because we do have a shared alignment system. We do have a shared belief system.
Yeah.
It's like testimony.
Sante, let's piggyback off that. Why is this spiritual healing so important for survivors?
It's one of the big things that is neglected oftentimes with survivors. All of us have a unique journey as survivors, but I can speak for myself. It was one that I neglected the most without even recognizing that I was neglecting that. And I was actually doing the work of helping survivors and tell their stories and help them in their healing processes. And so that's a very difficult thing for us to go through at times. We have this disassociation from our survivorship sometimes. It's how we survive. It's how we keep going. And so having a space where you can actually attack that, where you can actually address that,
yeah.
is super, super important. It's part of the healing journey.
What do you hope that you can provide for people?
I hope that we can provide some sense of self again. I tell people all the time that when you are assaulted, it's like killing someone without taking their life. They are never the person that they were before the event. And so I'm hoping that we can give someone a sense of self again. We can help them find who they are today after the fact. And sometimes that's a quick journey for some, and sometimes it's a very long journey, but it's all a process.
Yeah. Mojay, what's your response to folks who hear all this and they might say, oh, this isn't for me? Maybe they're saying that because it sounds denominational, mm-hmm. or because they have had a negative experience in a religious space.
So there's two pieces to that. First of all, one of our board members coined the term post-denominational for us, and we are putting that on the record before some French, you know, asparagus cooker, like chef decides that's what they're calling their asparagus. And yeah, you probably know which board member said that to me. But yeah, I think that the thing is that it's not, it's more like the way that a UU church, Unitarian Universalist Church approaches the togetherness of people who practice multiple faiths but still share a like world of belief system of doing good in the world and like things like that, right? A serving community. And so to that end, regardless of whether or not you literally believe in no God whatsoever or no spiritual whatever whatsoever, we still will serve you. That's the point, right?
Yeah.
And I think that that's true of any religious space. If you want to be in community with folks in a mosque, the average mosque will say, come in, right? And the same is true for the average church and the average synagogue and the average, you know, Krishna service and so forth. So Hare Krishna service. And so I think that what it comes down to is that, like, it's our service to the community that matters. And in terms of denomination, come one, come all, we got you to the best of our capacity. And yeah, I mean, like I said earlier, we're not all crying in the corner. We may say some serious stuff on the mic.
There are moments of joy.
Yeah, there's so many moments of joy, so many moments of joy.
And Sante, take this just a step further, because again, some folks are listening and they're thinking, oh, this is church-like, but this isn't church, right? What do you say?
I say that spirituality is a thing, and you don't need to be a denomination to do that. And it's something that we all should be in tune with and tapping into. It's part of how we heal. It's part of how we progress. We are not here to tell you how to do that. We are not here to tell you who you should be turning to do that. We are just hoping to give you some inspiration, some encouragement, and some support while you figure that out for yourself. And all spiritual journeys are unique, and everyone has to figure that out for themselves.
Yeah. Well, Nikki, there's no definitive data out there on the number of people who experience sexual harm at the hands of clergymen,
sure,
or in religious spaces, right? We do know that it doesn't just happen in the Catholic Church.
Not at all.
What is particular about this kind of violence compared to, say, other forms of sexual violence?
Sure. I mean, I think that the difference is your level of expectation. And I have the same feeling about when this happens in organizing spaces and in arts and in education spaces, that you go into these spaces with the promise that the people who are leading these spaces are leading you to a better version of yourself. Mm-hmm. They're enriching your life with education. They're enriching your life with insight. They're enriching your life with support, whether that's emotional, psychological, or spiritual. Another aspect of this, in addition to people experiencing sexual harm within those spaces, are people who come to those spaces for solace, for relief, for support.
I mean, there's a sense of trust there.
There's a sense of trust. And when you break that trust, either by violating it in terms of, you know, harming someone with sexual violence, or you violate that trust by shaming someone when they've come to you for support and for understanding and for, you know, all the things that you come to a spiritual space for, when you compromise that trust, I think it reverberates on a level that is way deeper than when it happens just mm-hmm. in other situations, because there's a level of trust you're already walking in with
yeah.
for someone. They break that trust, and then now you're not only dealing with broken trust, but you're also harmed, and you have this trauma. And now the space that you would normally go to deal with trauma, you can't even access that space anymore.
And there's the element of salvation.
Absolutely. And like you feeling like, did I get it wrong? Did yeah. I trust the wrong person? I came here looking for this and now this happened.
Well, Sante, Nikki brings up the point of shaming, right? So let's dig into that a little bit. How can the response from religious leaders after alleged sexual assault, you know, how can that affect a survivor's ability to actually heal? Like, what is the best case scenario? Like, how would we like leaders to respond?
I believe you. I would like to hear that.
Preach.
I believe you. I think that first and foremost, that is something that they are met with all the time. Survivors are often afraid to tell their stories because of disbelief. And so just, I believe you and I support you. And how can I support you? That is the best case scenario. And support looks different for each of us. All of our survivorships are unique. So we are going to need different things in that healing process. But one thing that we all need is to hear, I believe you.
So Moshe, talk about how you all came up with this concept of the survivor's revival.
Actually, I'm going to just levy it over to Nikki because this was definitely
her brainchild.
Yes.
Tell us and try to describe for us what one of these revivals will be like. What will it look like?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, our first one is this weekend, so we're very excited.
Sunday?
Yeah, this Sunday. So we don't quite know yet what it'll look like, but I do know like what I want it to feel like.
Okay.
So over the summer, I had the privilege of going to Ebenezer Baptist Church in Atlanta, Georgia. I was working with them on ending mass incarceration campaign. And I love that church. That was Martin Luther King Jr.'s church, Senator Raphael
legendary
Warnock's church.
Church.
Right. Legendary church. And I just said, Sasha, you know, I identify as a heathen. So I'm not in church often. Right. But in this church, I was just like in tears. The services were so beautiful. The music was just incredible. The testimony was just captivating. And it stayed on my mind for weeks and weeks and weeks. So flash forward to this February and we're filing our designation and we're like, oh, we're going to file as a religious organization. And I was like, we need to do services. Like we can't do this and not have like our own church service. And then I thought about over the years, that's what gets said to us often. This feels like church. It feels like church. It feels like church. Well, what's the best part of church? One, the stories, a really powerful testimony where you walk away feeling like you learned something. The music, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, and I think also being with people with whom you feel like you have an affinity, a community. And so I said,
is that the need you're trying to fill?
And that's the need that we're trying to fill, because I think a lot of us, especially those of us who are artists and survivors, we love church. We love spaces where we actually can feel something and feel not only connected to whoever's on stage, but also feel connected to each other. And we've been able to get there as surviving the mic plenty of times,
yeah,
but not really during like our open mic spaces. So I said, you know, we need to come back to an in-person, because we've been doing this virtually since the beginning. Like the first week of the pandemic, we went to weekly virtual programming.
It's wild.
For like the balance.
Oh, so it's been well over 2 years.
So it's been well over 2 years. Yeah. And so this is our first time back in person. And I said, well, if we're going to come back, let's come back in a way that feels more enriching, that feels like it's going to reverberate with people. And that's really going to give people something to really walk away with that will carry them through their week, through the month, that feels like church, but doesn't have any of like the negative parts.
Where is it going to take place?
So it's going to take place. We're so excited about this. We're collaborating with an amazing organization in Humboldt Park called the Honeycomb Network. It's a Puerto Rican femme queer led space. It's a co-working space, a retail space that features healing products from Black and Brown small business entrepreneurs. And it also has like an event space, and it is beautiful, filled with light and plants and just art on the walls. It's stunning. And when we walked in, we just knew that that's where we needed to be. And that's led by Denise Ruiz.
Now, I know they haven't happened yet, Moshe, and Nikki just did a beautiful job sort of walking us through the concept there. But I mean, who are you hoping to reach from this series?
I think aside from like sort of the blanket of survivors, we have to also remember that trauma reverberates, it ripples. So if you are a family member of a survivor, if you are a close friend, a partner of a survivor, you know, anyone in community with a survivor, that can impact you as well. So we want to create a space that enables folks to do some of that like vibration of healing together.
Yeah.
And I think that we have to, like, we were talking about this a little bit earlier when it comes to faith spaces and how that can impact you. But because of the fact that, you know, these questions come up, did God let this happen? Did I do something that God put this situation into my life and I've experienced harm now because of me or something like this? We want to make sure that folks can move through those feelings and come to that place of like, just to heal and reconnect with whatever their spiritual practice is, without the expectation, and I feel like this is very important, without the expectation of needing to, quote, forgive the other person, but instead focus on the healing within.
Sante, Surviving the Mic has several guidelines, right? You'll weave these into the revivals as sort of jumping off points for the meditations. Some of these guidelines, I was looking at them on your website, and they caught my eye. One of them in particular, you don't have trigger warnings. Why not?
Because if you're talking about trauma, you undoubtedly will be triggered at some point. It's impossible for us to prevent someone from being triggered in some way. And so we don't give trigger warnings. Instead, we just want them to be reminded that this is a brave space and to take care of yourself. So what we always start out saying to all of our attendees, our participants, is take care of yourself first. If you are needing to step away, step away. If this is too much, do that. We try and have, well, we all the time have a crisis counselor on deck. I am a crisis interventionist myself.
Okay.
And we're there to provide support in case there are some triggers, but we cannot prevent them. And so we just want to be honest and transparent about that. I feel like if we don't do that, we're setting folks up. And so when they are triggered, it's disappointing and it actually injures worse.
Mm. Good point. Another of the guidelines is that you don't dig into the details of people's stories, Nikki. Mm-mm. So as a journalist, you know, I ask questions for a living. You know, digging is my middle name.
Absolutely.
So I need you to walk me through this one.
Sure. I mean, I think it depends on the context that you're in, Sasha. Like, you know, right here, right now, this is your role, right, is to dig in and ask us questions and get like all the good stuff. But like when you're in church, if you go to church, you probably don't do that. Like you probably don't, you know, ask questions of whoever's like at the pulpit. You just sort of accept
right.
whatever it is that they have to offer. And so for our space, we've recognized that that's the goal of our space is to just hold that space for people, literally just hold it.
Mm.
We don't have to judge it. I don't have to like necessarily like some people come in and the way that they've processed their story, it's that it's not even their story. Maybe it's fiction story. Maybe it's haiku. Maybe it's something where we're not going to get all the details. I'm not going to know this happened and this happened. And I've, you know, this is why this happened. We don't need to know that. We're just grateful that you've decided to, it's an act of generosity to say, hey, I'm going to offer up this really painful story or this really hard thing that I've been through. I'm going to offer up that and I'm going to offer up that process in front of people and trust that you're going to listen to me and not judge me and not make me feel even worse about it. You're not going to cause me any further harm. So for us, just taking in people's stories, it's kind of a revolutionary act because especially when it comes to sexual violence, I don't know what it is about this particular kind of violence. But it turns people into like Law and Order, CSI, you know,
yeah.
Olivia, whatever her name is.
Benson. Olivia
right,
Pope.
Right, you know, whoever it is.
All the Olivias. Angela Lansbury.
Right. When
Inspector
I love me
Gadget.
Some murder, she wrote. Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, whoever. Right.
Exactly.
We're like, now we got to, you know, I have a DNA processing lab in my garage. Like, no. Like, sometimes you can just let people's story be their story.
Yeah.
And
no,
you
I
don't
you.
Have to know, right? You don't have to, like, get all the details. You don't have to get the justification for what happened to them. You can just hold that space
yeah.
and listen. And that's what we do. And so that's our lane and we stay in our lane. I wanted to mention too about triggers real quick. One of the other reasons why we don't do trigger warnings is that we feel like it's arrogant mm-hmm. to presume that we would know mm-hmm. what would trigger someone. Because really it could be anything. And that's the importance of holding that space in the way that we hold it is that with people processing things the way that they process it, we never know how something's going to hit someone. So for us, our role is to be there, to hold that space, to provide those resources, and to respond and help really guide them through what my son and I call like big feelings, you know, the
yeah.
tough stuff.
This is Reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. We're talking about the Survivors Revivals. That's an initiative of Surviving the Mic that will hold a spiritual space for survivors of sexual harm as part of the healing journey. Now, the first one's going to be this Sunday, April 30th, and we are talking with the executive directors of the organization. That's Nikki Pétain, Mojde Stokely, and Sante Harden Tate. All right, so you have brought some poems for us, right?
I
mean, you can't talk about poetry and not hear some poems.
That's true.
So let's dig in. Nikki, how about you go first?
Sure. This is a piece that was inspired by Ego Trippin' by Nikki Giovanni. This is a sestina, which is a poem with six stanzas of six lines and a final triplet. All the stanzas have the same six words, at the line ends in six different sequences that follow a fixed pattern, with all six words appearing in the closing three-line envoy. If you doubted whether or not we love poetry, and if we knew to this and not true to this,
I mean, so technical.
But I love the sestina. It's a French verse form, one of my favorites. And so this is called Sestina for the Stars. Born perfect, brutally birthed ethereal, how else shall we describe the genesis of a star? Eyes, searing jewels reflecting every angle of the divine, I dare you to bottle my light. Heavy with every kind of light, rippling, undulating across my bulging skin, perfect, my goddess body is not only divine, but flesh dripping down my bones, ethereal, as if my belly were stuffed with rare jewels, embodying refraction, I mirror convex, no shade, all star. Can't keep your eyes off the bounce of this star, skittering across the cosmos, a flashlight illuminating hidden jewels, studying the gorgeous landscape, perfect, smile rich and full, buttery and ethereal, like that last creamy mouthful of ice cream, divine. The last little bite of heaven one can't get enough of, divine. I dare you to dissect a star, crack open trillions of years of ethereal. No, not too many can stand the intensity of this light. No, not many at all can keep company with this kind of perfect. Flaws abound in the promise of jewels. I never cared for jewels, always borrowing their glamour from the divine while pretending to be perfect. I know a rare gem still pales next to a true star, which can both shine and glare depending on the angle of the light. So gorge yourself on my ethereal. Behold my generosity in gifting you the vision of my ethereal. Do use your tongue to savor my jewels. Bask in my shameless light. I am a channel of the divine sauntering across the sky. I am a star, intentionally showing off well-worn orbits while naming myself perfect. My light ethereal, perfect big belly full of jewels, divine, refusing to be called anything except star.
Ooh, goosebumps. That star imagery is just...
Snap for that. We'll snap for that.
It's amazing. And suddenly I want ice cream.
Yeah.
That's the whole point.
But explain to us that importance of making room for these stories, right? And the impact that can have on making change.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this poem in particular... You know, it's hard sometimes to look at yourself and say, yeah, I'm a star. I'm dope. I'm divine. It's one of the hardest things to do. And especially if you've experienced any kind of harm. I think you can feel like you're a little tarnished, mm-hmm. right? Like you're not quite 100%. So to be able to like look in the mirror and say, no, I'm a star. I'm divine. I'm perfect. And then to be able to read this piece. And I know, like, with these folks and with the other folks of Surviving the Mic, I can read this piece and I'm not going to get any shade thrown at me. I'm not going to get anyone who disagrees with me. As a matter of fact, I'm going to get people who are lifting that up and who are saying, you know, you are a star. You are divine. We see that. You see that in yourself. We see that in you, too. And that is like, I can't overstate the healing power of that.
How do you work with folks to share their stories in a way that's self-protective, Sante?
We allow them to do that on their time and their space and what feels comfortable and genuine to them. We don't pressure. We don't push. We actually have one of the members who has a notebook. We know it's fire in that notebook, but yet they have not shared any of those stories with us yet. When you're in survivorship, it is your journey, and we just want to support you. We want to make sure we're giving you the space when you're ready to speak up. And when you are, you're going to be met with love, acceptance, and care, and admiration, because it takes so much courage to tell your stories, even if it's not about survivorship due to sexual harm, but just survivorship as a human. We see all survivorship, and we want to make sure you're uplifted in that.
Yeah. Mojde, let's get to your poem.
All right. So I know that in America we have a real love for, we have a real love for plea deals in our court system. Mm-hmm. And I have kind of an obsession with spending time with the law, reading policy, as much as I have an obsession with reading scripture. And I realize there's this crossover and kind of a misuse of the word testimony in this plea deal system, because often if you take a plea deal, which is really an agreement with the government to just say something that you are guilty in order to have a shorter sentence. And so I have a series of testimonies that are from each of my complex identities, like the ascendant of enslaved Black Americans, the ascendant of and current family member of religiously oppressed in Iran, the teacher, the gender fluctuating person. And this one is called The Woman.
Okay.
The Woman. Make me a new tale so that I may leave the old one distraction and no longer be prey. Make me desert walker skin like ash, ashy midnight water bearers so that these night chameleons may wash themselves to glisten at dawn again for cool, evaporating kisses of sun. Better these reptile women don't boil. Make me married with equality without question for how my desert days made wrinkle of my purity to survive roadrunner men. Make me man maker. Save God.
Do folks need to register, Mojdeh, to ahead of time if they're interested in participating in this revival?
Yes. Yes,
I mean,
do.
If that's just a taste, I can only imagine what they're in for on Sunday and beyond, right?
Yes.
Wow, we're out of time, but thank you so much for sharing with us. We've been talking with the three leaders of the local arts nonprofit Surviving the Mic. Their first Survivors Revival for Survivors of Sexual Violence is going to be this Sunday, April 30th. It's at the Honeycomb Network in Humboldt Park from 12 to 4. Thanks. Future events are going to be held the last Sunday of the month moving forward. We've been talking with Nikki Patan, who's the founder and executive producer, Mojdeh Stokely, the research and innovation officer, and Sante Harden-Tate, the advocacy and accountability officer, all of them executive directors. Thank you, everyone, for being here in studio with us.
Thank you
so much.
That episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Linnea Dominic and edited by Dan Tucker. If you liked the conversation, send it to a friend. Word of mouth is still one of the best ways to get more people to join the discussion we're having on Reset. Thanks for listening. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. We'll meet again tomorrow.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.